From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 9th day of May, 2024. Happy birthday to me. I am now 60. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather. He'll tell us about dry weather conditions in Russia, the wet weather in southern Brazil, what the Safrina crop is looking like at this point. While it's been dry, it still looks good, he says. And we'll also take up the soggy forecast for the planting season here in the Midwest. Oh, and along the way, we'll toy with AI or artificial intelligence. That's my birthday present to me. But we'll experiment today and see how that goes right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.56.5, two lower. September down a penny and a half at $4.67. And December corn at $4.80, 1.25 cents lower. July beans down 19 and a quarter, $12.85 the settlement price. November at $12.15, down 12.5 cents. Bean meal futures 5.60 lower for the day. The bean oil at $42.64, down $1.15. July wheat futures up 3.5 cents at $6.37.5 in the soft red, and the hard red July at $6.51.75, up 3.25 cents. Live cattle futures were 52.5 lower, and lean hogs were down $1. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're not in the field, I take it. Oh, and you're celebrating your youngest birthday today, too.
Yeah, we're still too wet, of course. We've been very close about three times now. We just can't quite get over the hump and get dry enough to where we can get out there and go. Unfortunately, some of this stuff started to green up, so we're going to have all hands on deck. But, today's a good day. We spent the morning together and got an eight-year-old, is the youngest now, so hard to believe.
Too fun. Okay, so how close are you actually being to done? And I mean, in general, not just you, but everybody around the area there.
Always. I don't know of anybody that's done. I'd say we're less than half. And there's a lot of folks that are, that have made zero progress at all yet, there's a lot of folks that have maybe planted a quarter of their crop, but it's just how close are we? I'd say if you could get the sun, maybe a little bit of air moving and no rain, let's say for 4 days, and you'll have people back in the field. We haven't had some of these like toad stranglers like they're getting up north, that some of my friends and colleagues and customers have said they had 2 and 3 inches in places. We've been very fortunate there, but we're still just too wet to go.
Many farmers are looking at this and thinking, hey, there's an opportunity next week maybe, or the week after that, for me to make a cash corn old crop sale. I don't know whether they'll think about new crop at that time. Should they put those orders in today and not pull them? Because if it happens next week, they will try to pull them.
Yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, that's what happens a lot of times. I think we've got to keep our perspective because bottom line is, we're in a position to where, we're a lot better off than what we were a couple, even 3 weeks ago. And so, this market's put together a little rally. Of course, we gave some back there on Wednesday. I feel like they're maybe trying to flush a few of the, maybe some of the week longs out. I mean, I'm not bullish, but I'm definitely more supportive short term than what I would be longer term. I think you've got to get this crop planted. Most people want to see it 50% done by the 10th. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe it does, but my gut feeling is that it won't. With the large variety of growers that we work with, very few are able to run here today. So, I've got to think this is the time of year you rally. You're probably going to see maybe another move higher. But with that being said, you've got to use those sort of moves. I mean, we closed Friday, last Friday. It was the highest close we'd seen since January the 10th. So, you know, to me, it's hard to sit there and thumb your nose at what would be almost a four-month high.
If tomorrow's USDA report comes out as suspected based on the ag form and the prospective planting figures, how much of a dampening does it do to the prospects?
Well, you know, I think these numbers are largely known. We understand the USDA is likely to come in around that 181 that they use for the Outlook Forum. We know they'll use 90 million for the acres. While I think acres could potentially maybe actually go up a little bit there at the end of June if we don't have a lot of, prevent plant on the backside of that later in the year, I guess I can see that potentially a little bit of a bearish factor. But at the same time, I think there's a lot to learn. I think 181 might be a really tough stretch at this point. Yes, you got some subsoil moisture in some of the areas that were extremely dry. But typically, whenever you plant the crop late, it's not just that it goes in the ground late. It's just that, a lot of us do stuff that's not real smart in the spring, you know, whenever it's wet. It's hard to wait. Everyone starts running. The top ground in our area, Todd, looks phenomenal. But the problem, of course, is that extra day or two meant all the world, difference in the world. You know, and so some of the wetter ground, it's really tough to get going on. But, I think 181 is probably largely out of the mix. And I think the trade probably knows that without just an absolute pristine situation from this point moving forward. And so I do think the numbers will maybe be discounted somewhat. It's expected to be bearish. And unless it's just overtly bearish in excess of what we're expecting, I really don't expect the market to move sharply lower there.
If and when a 400 million bushel carryout and above drops for soybeans tomorrow, how much of an impact does that have psychologically?
Yeah, I think that it's probably a little more so than corn. You know, obviously we want to get these beans in the ground early. People know that that's been the trend. It's definitely helped with yields, of course, for a lot of us growers, which is translated into the national yield discussion, that trend moving higher. But at the same time, I think you've got obviously some weather issues in South America that could factor in and maybe support you somewhat with southern Brazil flooding. But at the same time, you know, you've probably got enough beans in the world, first of all. Second of all, we definitely have enough beans in the U.S. And so I think it's just a discussion of what do we see happen whenever you see a 400 plus carry? You know, what do we see happen when we see 2 billion 2 years in a row? And I think over the long haul, a person would be probably not doing themselves any favors if they didn't go back and look and see what the price action looked like in the past, because 400 million plus on soybean carryout is not $12 plus beans. And so, you know, whenever we had 1230 beans earlier this week, we almost filled the gap on November beans. Yeah, you got to respect that kind of a move. I mean, that gap we've been looking at all winter long. Can we go back up there and fill it? I absolutely think we can, but I don't want to ignore it the second time around.
Hey, thanks much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. A couple of agricultural news stories to consider for the day. First, farmers have been making fewer changes this year. Lower commodity prices, the high input cost, and disappointing 2023 growing season results are influencing farmer decisions. The 2024 Farmer Speaks survey reveals that farmers are taking a more conservative approach in their decision making. They're making fewer changes overall, driven by concerns about short-term prospects and long-term finances. Fertilizer remains the primary focus for the adjustment, despite more moderate prices. 52% of growers purchased fertilizer earlier, marking a decrease of 7% from last year. Farmers say their intent to buy more ag equipment, too, has dropped by 24% over the last year. A recent Rabobank report says the global pork industry is starting to shift as sow herd numbers begin to plateau. After declining for some time, the stabilization, the company says, is a result of better-than-expected consumption trends coupled with reduced production cost across most regions. These factors are contributing to a more optimistic outlook for hog prices and are encouraging producers to consider rebuilding their herds. And finally, heavy flooding in southern Brazil has hit food storage facilities in lower areas and hampered producers' ability to get grain shipped to ports. Port News says that's jeopardizing the nation's exports and causing significant trouble for the economy in Rio Grande do Sul, a state that produces a lot of soy, rice, wheat, and meat. The ANEC, an association representing global grain exporters, says the access to the port of Rio Grande has been disrupted because a local rail line stopped operating. The group that represents firms like Cargill and Bunge also cited road blockages forcing grain trucks to travel an extra 250 miles through alternative routes to reach the port, which increases freight costs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, a story about trendline yield. This is based on an article that Scott Irwin posted to the Farm Doc Daily website. But first, I want to tell you about the process I used to write this story. Honestly, I did not write this story. I'm always looking for more efficient ways to produce what I hope is a good premium product for you to listen to. And now there are a couple of new things that have arrived. AI, of course, and then my audio editor, which has just been input, and I voice, and then output to this point. However, it now will transcribe from whatever interview or audio that is sitting within the editor. That's one portion of some future things I hope to be able to do. But for now, what you're going to hear next is an audio story that I voiced that was written by Google Gemini, or the artificial intelligence, the AI that Google has available, and for which I did some light editing afterwards. Google did a really good job. I simply fed it the text from the Farm Doc Daily article that Scott Irwin had written on trendline yield, and then mostly voiced what it gave me back as a news story. You know, projecting the size of the U.S. corn crop hinges really on two key factors, planted acres and yield per acre. Estimating yield, however, can be tricky, especially when it comes to long-term trends. A recent debate has centered on whether the rate of growth in the U.S. average corn yield has slowed. Now, some argue the corn yield curve has flattened out since 2013, suggesting a slowdown in technological advancements. University of Illinois researchers, however, used a crop weather model to analyze the issue and found no evidence of significant trend change. Their findings suggest the slowing increase of corn yields is more likely due to unfavorable growing seasons, not a technology slump. Weather is the dominant factor driving yields from year to year, explains Scott Irwin, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. He developed the crop weather model and says it considers both technological change and various weather variables, including planting time, precipitation, and temperature. This is how it isolates the impact of weather on yield fluctuations. By the way, this is not the first time the corn yield trend line has sparked debate. Researchers point to similar discussions in the 1960s and 1990s, following periods of exceptional yields. In those cases, too, observers attributed the gains to advancements, overlooking the role of favorable weather. For this year, Scott Irwin's University of Illinois crop weather model projects a U.S. average corn yield of 182.1 bushels per acre. However, he says this estimate may need adjustment based on late planting data available after May the 20th. The weather model will take this information into account at that time and continue to update the corn yield projection based on changing weather information throughout the season. Now, you may read more from Scott Irwin on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the article titled, "Is the Trend Rate of Growth in the U.S. Average Corn Yield Slowing?" Tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central, USDA will provide its first official projection for the size of the 2024 corn crop. It's expected to use the 181 bushel the acre yield presented during its February Ag Forum. Interestingly, that number is half a bushel lower than the trendline yield the agency used at this same time last year. Mike Tenora, the CEO at T-Storm Weather, that's tstorm.net online now, joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the global growing regions. Mike, let's begin here in the United States. There has been a lot of wet weather that has stalled planting corn and soybeans across the whole of the Midwest. Farmers are wanting to get back into the field and actually maybe for corn sooner rather than later, needing to get back in the field. What do you see over the next, week at the moment? And then we can talk about further out as well.
Well, the forecast is not totally problematic for planting coming up, but I think the bigger issue is that it's been very wet over the last several weeks and several months. No matter how you look at it, U.S. corn, soybeans, and even spring wheat are saturated at the moment, and we're going to need a pretty extended period of drying for everything to turn out fine from a planting perspective. There is some rain out there today, not a real big deal, with most of that along and north of I-80 in parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Once we get into this weekend, a few more showers here and there, but all in all, the next 3 to 4 days don't look all that bad, with some pretty dry weather outside of some showers. The potential issues start up once we get into early next week. We have a system that's going to move across Kansas and Oklahoma this weekend, and that'll then drift into the southern Corn Belt and into the Mid-South once we get into early next week. We're thinking there will be some significant rainfall with that event. Most of this one will be to the south of Interstate 80, with anywhere from a half of an inch to 1 inch of rain, looking fairly probable in a pretty wide swath there, with the heavier amounts as you move further and further south. So that right off the bat, Todd, is going to be kind of problem number one for corn planting. Now, one thing we do need to keep in mind, especially locally, is that Indiana and Ohio have actually dried out a little bit over the last couple of weeks. That has been the exception, though. Central Indiana through Central Ohio has managed to miss out on a lot of these rains, but that's only representing around 5% of U.S. corn and soybean production, maybe 10 if you want to get into all the little tiny details. But that's not the big story. The big story is the other 90%. So once we get beyond early next week, there's another system coming in. And this is the one that's really going to determine how much of this corn crop is planted on time. That system is going to move across the Dakotas Tuesday and Wednesday and then drift into the Corn Belt later next week. There's still some uncertainty with exactly how much rain is going to happen with that event. We think there'll be a half of an inch to the west of the Mississippi River and a half of an inch to an inch to the east. This is all still, again, around a week out from now, so things can change. But if they change to the wetter side, that's where the problems start, because now it's going to be very difficult to get a lot of corn planted by the subjective cutoff date of around May 20th for U.S. planting. Once you get beyond May 20th, a lot of that corn that gets planted then has a pretty big yield penalty that normally happens simply because it's either going to get hit by a frost in the fall or it's just going to time out poorly with it pollinating in August, which is a little bit late and gets into some of the drier and hotter periods of the year. So that's kind of where everything is lining up in our opinion. This system next week is the one that's really going to determine whether or not we have a little bit of a planting problem or a more significant one.
On the rain delays in South America, farmers in the southern part of Brazil are in the midst of trying to harvest their soybean crop. They have been flooded, and I'm wondering if they'll find some time there or if rain continues.
Well, rain is going to continue. They'll have scattered thunderstorms here and there. They're looking for around 100% to 200% of normal rainfall over the next 2 weeks. And while that in and of itself might not be too big of a deal, the bigger problem is how much rain has happened over the last 10 days. If we look at the state of Rio Grande do Sul, which is where about 25% of soybeans were left to be harvested as of a week ago, and that represents about 6 million metric tons. So, you know, compare that to the U.S., you're talking about basically 5% of the U.S. crop is still sitting out there in the field. Well, that crop had about 10.5 inches of rain over the last 10 days. The next closest period for the most recent 10 days was around 4.5 inches. So we're way above that. And because of how much rain we've had over the last 10 days, if you go from April 1st through May 7th in Rio Grande do Sul, which again is a state that still has these soybeans to harvest, they've had their wettest period there in more than 46 years of record by beating out 1998 by about 2.5 inches. Total rainfall over that period is right around 15 inches of rain, with most of that, again, having come over the last 10 days. That just gives you some idea of how wet it is there. And even with a little bit of rain coming up, that's just going to keep things problematic for them, either from a quality standpoint or from whether or not they even can get it harvested. So definitely a challenge there, and we'll have to just wait and see how the producers respond.
In center west Brazil, the Safrina corn crop has entered that dry season. I think it did so early. What are you thinking about conditions for it?
Well, the dry season did start about 2 to 3 weeks early, but the thing you need to keep in mind is that it was pretty wet right up until rain suddenly stopped. And because of that alone, that's going to present a big crop problem here. If we compare it to last year, which is actually the best comparison that we have going back to about 2018, it was somewhat similar. It was also pretty wet over the first half of their growing season. Then the rain suddenly shut down. The primary differences based on our proprietary data is that this year actually was a little bit wetter from March through the middle of April, but then the dry season started about 5 to 10 days earlier. So how those two issues respond against each other is what's going to eventually determine how big that crop is or how small it is. But last year was quite a bit above the trend. So, you know, again, no crop disaster here from this, but it would have been a bumper crop had it not stopped raining.
And finally, on the opposite side of that, meaning dry weather, the Russian wheat crop or portions of it came through a drought. And now I think they've also had some freezes, and you have concerns still?
Well, we certainly do. If you look at the drought there, it's pretty impressive no matter how you look at it. You can look at it over the last 30, 60, or 90 days, and the charts are screaming, it's too dry here. They have had a little bit of rain over the last few days, so that's alleviated that a tiny bit. And there is some rain on the horizon, not a drought-busting rain, at least not in the areas that really need the rain, but at least the drought's not going to be quite as intense as they move forward over the next couple of weeks. We do have that frost and freeze problem, though. It was really mild over most of the winter and most of the spring, with temperatures very much above normal and very likely including record levels of warmth over the last 2 to 3 months leading into this period. But then last Thursday night, we had this significant, or excuse me, last Friday night, we had a significant frost and freeze for the northern half of the winter wheat crop, and temperatures got all the way down to 21 degrees in some of these areas. Now, not all of that was heading, but some of it was jointing, and that's where some of those concerns begin. So we're still trying to figure out what happened there. But the other problem, that we had another frost and freeze last night, and there's going to be another one tonight. Tonight's the more significant of the last two, just because it's a little bit later in the season now, and because it is going to be just a little bit colder, with temperatures anywhere from 24 to 36 degrees for overnight lows. So that'll do probably a little bit more damage. Once we get out of this, then that's it. There's no more frost or freezes on the horizon. But, Todd, just quite a lot going on, you know, not only with Russia, the Brazil situation, and the U.S. So kind of three big things going on all at the same time.
Thank you for keeping track of it all for us. We'll check in with you again next Thursday.
That sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand, whenever you'd like. Just click and play from the website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find the opening market report, the midday report, the closing market report, and our commodity week program. That one's usually recorded on Thursday afternoons, but because of tomorrow's USDA report, we'll wait until it's over with to talk with the analyst, including Joe Jansen from the U of I, Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, and Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.